Hello everyone, my name is Jeremy Farson and I am an alcoholic. And heart's racing. I hate these things. I'm always baffled whenever I'm asked to come speak on one of these things because I really don't belong here, is the story I tell myself. The interesting thing about alcoholism, though, is that's how it shows up after you're sober. It tells you that you don't belong here. And I was sitting there thinking, oh my God, I'm just taking a look around. Alcohol scumbag, what do I have in common with these people? And I remember, oh yeah, alcoholism, that's it, right? So, my story is the same as anybody else's. I was born, I had a terrible childhood because people expected me to eat my vegetables and clean my room. And it was very terrible because my ego didn't approve of the things that were required of me. And I could tell you that I had a very terrible life, and I could tell you that I was an orphan, and I could tell you all these other things. But then there's this interesting thing that happens, and people say, wow, I've never been through that. And so I've learned over the years to not compare my childhood to your childhood, because what I've learned is it's my adulthood that I need to focus on, and I'm never going to feel like an adult until I start to act like an adult. And there's all these old-timers in AA that say the way that you get healthy self-esteem is by acting right and doing esteemable things. You shouldn't focus too much on your childhood, but focus more on getting involved in your adulthood, because your life is passing you by and you're not getting any younger and you're still looking for somebody else to blame. And that's terrible if you're stuck in victim mode. The camp I come from, we talk about these things called victim cards. My victim card is better than yours. Like, you come from a broken home, I come from a broken home, and I didn't know what they look like. Or you come from a whole home, yeah, but somebody passed away early. And what we've learned is, at least in my neighborhood, is we don't really need to focus on what we thought God was when we were younger, but I better find him now, otherwise I'm in trouble. And I don't mean I need to find him when I come to AA, I mean I need to find him now, today, like the set-aside prayer talks about. I have a simple version, it's like God save me from myself. Because I think I know a few things, and I have a sober date, and I have a sponsor, and I sponsor others, and all that kind of stuff. But if you're here tonight, you're kind of on your last 30 days, you probably don't care what I have. You probably need to know that I didn't have a fantastic day or a fantastic life, and I walked into AA, or I was walking down the street, and people from AA were like, hey you, Indian, come over here. My friend Tony used to say that we need to have a Native American in every AA meeting. That way we could say it works for everybody, you know. And I say the problem with that is my people, we suffer from this thing called prejudice, right? Because you come from Europe with your European ideal of what God is, and we already had a belief of what the Creator is, one kind of tongue, the great mystery. The idea that no one can fully know God, that you can live and search, and those things are important. But my people come from the idea that your job is to walk in beauty, that you are supposed to live your life like you believe that there is a greater purpose other than yourself. And if you're new to AA, you don't care about any of that crap. If you're new to AA, or you're doing a dangerous thing in AA where you compare some AA to other AA, and our AA is better than your AA, and maybe I'm not ready to be there, I'm here to tell you one thing and one thing only. I need help. My home group is the Blue Door, 4318 Frankfort Ave. We are right underneath the L, and we are right on the front lines, and there is everything you could possibly imagine that you could purchase that will kill you right outside the front door. They don't care about AA's legacy, the triangle, unity, service, recovery. They're not supposed to. We're not out telling the bars and places that they need to shut down. We're not out driving people off the corners. What we're doing is what I was taught to do, is say, hey, do you know the reason why you suck at drinking? It's because the universe needs you to help somebody else who's drowning. You know what it feels like to drown? Good. What we want to do is take you through these 12 steps, turn you into a lifeguard, and get you out there looking for other people that are drowning. Because it takes one to know one. And that's not my opinion. It's not my sponsor against your sponsor. This program was founded off of a guy, Bill Wilson, having a terrible day. Found out he was missing the job opportunity of a lifetime and didn't want to go back to New York to face his wife to tell her, hey, it's all for nothing. And while sitting on a drink, the idea that had been drilled into him, you got to help somebody else in order to save yourself. That's all we're here for. So I would tell you real quickly that I was introduced to AA in 1987. And for some of you, like my children say, that means that I was born in the 1900s. And there's a lot of people that think, you know, AA was different back then. AA's always been the same. If you want to drink, that's your problem. If you want to stop it, you can't stop. It doesn't mean that you're not making enough meetings. It doesn't mean that you're not praying. It means it's a 12-step program. And my grant sponsor says it's a math problem. You got to do all 12, and nothing even starts until you hit 12. Not because I say so, but because people are dying and we really need your help. We're outnumbered where I come from. 19124, 19134, 19148. Come on down. Sponsor people. You'll be surprised where the people that you help out. And if you really understand how the AA program works, is really the more people you help, the less you have to do with it. That's what I know. I came into the program a very angry atheist. 1987 was not a good year for me, or any of the other ones afterward. And the reason why is because every time I would get in trouble drinking, I would stop. And if you're an alcoholic or one of my other 12-step fellowship friends, you know that when you put the stuff down, it gets worse on the inside. Things get better on the outside, it gets worse on the inside, and your brain starts to eat itself like a dog chasing its tail, and you start to think, well, you know what, this job is good, but it's not what I want it to be. Or this relationship is good, and it's not what I want it to be. And you know what, my group changed because it used to be like this. And sobriety is one of the worst things that can happen to an alcoholic. I should say sobriety. Sobriety is one of the worst things that can happen to an alcoholic. And I had different, various periods of sobriety. And while I was going to your meetings and hearing you people talk about trust God, clean house, and help others, I was like, F you, mind your own business, and leave me alone. Because none of that works for me. Where was God when I left abandoned on the side of the road? What kind of God would allow that? And what I didn't know was it's kind of dumb to blame God for something that somebody else did. But hey, when you're drinking, it says somewhere in some book, those who love the darkness hate the light. So, of course, I had to resist things that are like, don't drink massive amounts of bourbon. That seems like a good idea. Go to meetings, ask for help. Get out of here. I'm not asking nobody for help. I'm not weak. I don't need nobody. Get away from me with that. I don't need you to help me. I don't want you to help me. You don't know me. You don't look nothing like me. And if I hear one more person say, listen to you, hear your story, I don't know any Native Americans. You see any Arapaho clan here, southeastern Colorado? I don't. Because when I'm suffering with a bad case of sobriety, I will look for the differences and can't hear the similarities. Because my ego has this thing. It's like a shell. It's like a suit of armor. And what I'll do is I'll keep you out so you can't screw me over. And it wasn't until 2004 I had a big book thumper step in my life to tell me that that was not a suit of armor. That suit of armor that I had, it was actually suffocating. I was dying inside of myself. So if you're wondering why you couldn't stop drinking, or if you're listening on Zoom, thank God for Zoom. This is so amazing, man. I got a sponsor dude from Ireland during COVID, man. Like Ireland, bro. I'm a drunk from the railroad tracks. How does that happen? I don't get it. So I was supposed to tell you what it was like. What it was like was terrible. I was the smartest person I know, which means that in between drinking bouts, you want to die. Because the very same ego that told me that I don't have to listen to you, I don't got nothing in common with you, you don't know me, I can't learn from you, is the same thing that will turn around and boomerang back on me and say, you know what? They hate you. Everything you do winds up terrible. Everything you touch turns to crap. Just end it. Just end it. And so what you do when you're trying to run from yourself is you get really, really tired. So you need to drink to fuel more alcohol, and you go kind of go from state to state or from family member to family member or do whatever it is you do. And I'm not here to boast or brag, but I will tell you that I am one of the dumbest people that I have ever met. And the reason why is because I was dying and blaming everybody else for the decisions that I was making. Go figure, right? Emotional sobriety, nobody can tell me about. Because when you know everything, you can't learn anything. And what happens is, you do self-destructive things. Some of you steal stuff. Other people wreck stuff. Other people break stuff. And I was pretty sure by the time that this roofing company I was working with in 03 hired Mr. AA. You know this guy? Like, if you hate everybody and hate yourself, and you see somebody with a smile and they say some stupid stuff like, have a great day, you just want to go over and just choke them, right? Because I can't figure out how I'm smarter than you, I'm cooler than you, and you're doing better than me. Like, you're excited about it being a day. What's so great about a day? Because the ego can't comprehend surrender. It doesn't know anything about the relief and the flood of just endorphins that come from surrender. When you surrender, if you're listening and you're new and you're like, how come I can't get it? Because you can't get it. It gets you. That's the way it works. You work the program works you, God takes over. And it doesn't really matter how or where you get it. This guy didn't even say sober. I can tell you that. This guy, I can't tell you I heard anything prophetic or amazing or wonderful and I had a moment of clarity. That's not my story. My story is Thanksgiving 2004. I was having Thanksgiving turkey in a form of a half gallon of wild turkey, because that's what you do when you're a drunk. You drink by yourself and you blame everybody else for forgetting about you. But the truth is, you got to drink enough where you can kind of forget that it's your fault, that you hurt everybody else to the point where they have to run from you. Alcoholics, when we're drinking, we're about as lovable and huggable as porcupines, and we wonder why people go away. I remember that, too. I remember thinking, like, man, I wish people would leave me alone and just mean mug them. You know, like, what you looking at? You know, all that stuff. And then, like, later on, when nobody's talking, like, nobody cares about me. It's so funny how we do that to ourselves. But that's part of the neurological disease of alcoholism. Well, I'll push everybody away and then blame them for walking away. It's the most dangerous part. We think it's the drinking. It's not the drinking. The psychological damage and the impact that we have on the people around us is lethal. It's generational. The good news is, if you've burned every bridge that you have and you're out there listening tonight and you're trying to figure out how can I fix it, I have great news for you. You can't. But he can. May you find him now. And the way that that happens is you got to surrender. You got to give up being the smartest person you know. And that's a very terrible thing to do. It's not what I did. I'm going to tell the truth. I'm not going to act like I'm all spiritual. I tell my girlfriend all the time, like, I'm the least spiritual person I know. I did not come to AA looking for help. I went to this guy's recovery house because I wanted to hurt him. It's not very noble or beautiful. But he got me. On the street, usually you got to be ready. Like if somebody takes a step, you know they're coming around with the right. Or if they tense up, you know they're coming in with the uppercut. This dude hit me with one of your AA hugs that I did not see coming. I banged on the door. I hate this dude. I've been thinking all day. You know how you're thinking all day how you're going to get somebody? So I know I'm going to get this dude, right? He's like 18 feet tall, but I know I got a couple of shots in. I can double him over. And after I hurt him, I'm going to hurt myself because I'm done. No more. I can't do it anymore. I'm tired of reinventing myself. I'm tired of trying again. I'm tired of starting over. I'm tired of coming up with stories about why I couldn't or why I didn't or what I should have done or what I could have done. And I'm just done, man. I'm in Philadelphia, for God's sakes. I'm from Pueblo, Colorado. That's a few bus stops from here if you don't know Philly very well. That's kind of far. And I can't even say it got bad in Colorado when I came here. That's not my story. And I can't tell you when it gets tough, I run. I never ran. I just left. Running implies effort. I'm more like, can I get a ride out of town? And I'm the guy that blames the state troopers and accuses them of racially profiling me because I'm a Native American. And they got nothing better to do than to pick on minorities. It's not that I was doing anything illegal in Ohio. You know, I was minding my business. I was on my way to Kentucky. I may have been driving in the wrong lane. However, what I know is I came to Philadelphia sure that I was going to start over. The problem is, it's the same idea I had when I was in the Outer Banks in the Carolinas. And it's the same idea that I had when I was in Missouri. And it's the same idea I had when I was in Kentucky. So here I am in Philly. I'm standing outside this new recovery house door. And I want to hurt this dude. And he gives me one of the stupidest things you can give a tough guy. One of my therapists in rehab in 1987 said, you have a Napoleon complex, sir. And I thought that was a joke, right? I don't have a Napoleon complex. I am not French. Thank you very much. I talk with my hands because that's what you do when you don't care about yourself. You have self-destructive tendencies. And what he told me that day was, because I didn't have a mommy or a daddy, I was acting out of pain and expressing that in anger, but I was a very sad boy. And I knew he had no idea what I was talking about, and he had no idea where I was coming from, and I had no idea what he's talking about. And so just to prove to him that I didn't have an anger issue, I jumped across the desk and punched him in the mouth. And they escorted me out of there. And the same pain that was hurting me in 1987 was the same pain that was hurting me November 27, 2004, sitting in front of that recovery house with this idiot hugging me. asking me if I'm ready. Am I ready to surrender to win? Which makes no sense to me. He asked me if I've hit bottom. And if you find me a vet, just like if you find me any soldiers from overseas or find me any soldiers from the streets, what I'll tell you is I can't say that I'm a vet. I never did the honorable thing. But certainly I've been a soldier from the streets and a wannabe tough guy and a failed outlaw. And what I'll tell you is when it gets tough, you get tougher. There's no such thing as hitting bottom. The further you go, the uglier you get. Somewhere you lose track of your humanity, and it's okay, because if you drink, maybe you can drink enough to forget about the horrible things you did, which prevent you from coming and approaching God, because if there is a God, He doesn't want anything to do with me and the horrible things that I've done in my life. And, this idiot won't let go of me with this stupid hug. And I don't know what happened. I didn't surrender. I was tricked into recovery. Next thing I know, I'm in this guy's recovery house and he's talking to me and you got these new dudes in recovery. So if you're sitting here and you got a couple of weeks or a couple of months, or if you're on Zoom and you got a couple of weeks, a couple of months, you're like, I can't ever help anybody. Let me tell you something. The guys in that recovery house, they were first proof to me that God can make a somebody out of a nobody. And they weren't doing anything special. And the cook was, remember I told you the cook was, the first night I was there, he was doing something he shouldn't have been. But I was detoxing hard, because when you're drinking to live and living to drink, it's kind of hard to establish what's real and what's not when you're withdrawing from alcohol. And I don't know how I get here. What I'll tell you is I went in the bathroom like a tough guy does. And like a real tough guy, I took the pistol out of my back and I put it on the sink. And I turned the water on the sink as high as it'll go, so all them guys outside in the living room wouldn't know that a real tough guy like me sat on the toilet and cried because I couldn't figure out how to turn into such a loser, you know? When did I turn into a scumbag? And I'm not talking about the guy who's the loudest at the bar, I did this, or the guy who's on the corner, I did this. I got stuff in my head that I can't get rid of, and it haunts me. And I know I can't never make that right. So this trust God, clean house, and help others thing ain't going to work for me, because God don't want nothing to do with people like me. I can't live because I know I'm going to mess stuff up. I don't want to die because I know the spirit of worse will not come from me. There's no place of honor for me amongst my ancestors. I don't want to live. I don't want to die. I don't want to drink. I want to drink. What am I supposed to do? And I was so grateful for those guys. These guys gave me a couch and some pillows and a sheet. Like real luxury accommodations. You know what I mean? And they are too. Because in the Kensington-Frankfort area, nobody does nothing for nobody for free. So I was hesitant. Because where I come from, I ain't taking nothing from you because then I owe you double. Get out of here with that. Miss me with that. You know what happens when people do something for you and you owe them double? Miss me with that. If I need it, I'll take it. And you know what? I was like, yo, I'll pay you back. And he's like, no, you got that. This is a sheet. And a sheet might not seem like a big deal to you, but it's probably one of the only reasons why I'm standing here today. Was it no prophetic speech? It was the actions. Dr. Bob used to say, carry this message, and if you must, use words, and the rest of the time, show it, live it. Some guys in recovery house didn't have the conference structure memorized, they didn't have the concepts, they didn't know AA comes of age, and the other AA literature front to back, they didn't know any of that stuff, but they knew the only way to save themselves was to try to help a loser like me. And they did. And I was so grateful. It took me about 3 days. Because you know when you have like 3 days, you kind of come to, you withdraw, and you kind of look around, figure who out everybody is. In 3 days, you pretty much know everything you need to know. Right? Got that. And I'm doing what I need to do with 3 days sober. I'm causing chaos. I single-handedly, ladies and gentlemen, launched a revolution against blackout. And what we attempted to do under my visionary leadership was to do like a sit-in and not go to any mandatory meetings and not do any of our chores unless the recovery house guys would meet our demands and let us go bowling. So if you're listening, loser, failure, 1987, 2004, I haven't been bowling all that time. but suddenly sober, super sober, 3 days. Remember, I told you, 3 days sober. I know everything, right? And I've already figured out what's wrong with this recovery house. I'm a United States citizen, and there's treaties that the government broke. And by God, if I'm in this house and the door kicked open, the dude said, you, go. And I did the only thing a little guy with a Napoleon complex can do. I stood up to square off with this guy, which is funny because he was the size of this building. I built like a linebacker. And he told me he wasn't going to fight with me, that I was kicking my own rear end. And I don't know, I was going to offer him out, told him I was afraid of him. I take him down, guys, bigger than him. Like, I still got my strap out back hidden underneath the weight bench. I could go get it just in case I need it. I can pop this guy. No, it's only a 38, so it's probably not going to hurt the guy. You know, he's just going to make him mad like a bee stinging a bear. But I'll still pull it, right? Because I didn't know at that time. I wouldn't learn until a little while later when I started to meet big bull thumpers, real men, who didn't care what I thought or how I felt. They cared more about how I did. Real men who told me that only cowards carry pistols. Real men carry big books. Whether they're on the bus, whether they're walking down Frankfurt Ave, whether it's cool or whether it's not cool, whether people are making fun of them or people are listening to them. Real men carry big books. That's how AA thrives. I didn't know that at the time. So I was going to like tell this dude, like, I'm going to piece you up. I'm going to do all this and that, you know, because I don't want to be a tough guy anyhow. And somebody that sounded like me started crying and begged this guy not to make me go. Because I need help, man. I need help. I don't know how to stop being a problem. I'm a problem, man. No matter where I go, there's nothing I've ever done that's good. I can't go to God because there's too much dirt on my hands. I can't just stay busy. People say, get a hobby. You know what the problem is with hobbies? I can't stay sober long enough to figure, remember what hobby it was that I started. What am I doing? I was on my way to the laundromat in Ohio. This is Philly. Can somebody help me out here? What's happening? I don't have any say-so of my life. When I want to drink, I know that I shouldn't. And I went out a couple of times, and I think I got it on my own. And it's not that I'm afraid of the streets. I can do the streets. The streets are easy. You know what's hard? Pretending that I'm okay on the inside. Pretending like I don't want to die for the things that I've done. Pretending like everything's okay, because I know that it's not okay. And I feel like if I get around these, somebody's going to see through me. Because you hear people say, oh, I'm a chameleon. No, you ain't. If you wound up in AA, you suck as a chameleon, is what I was taught. This is not a zoo. This is where drunks come that need the help. And I don't know, man. I don't know what happened. God must have moved this dude. And Big Kev said, yo, you got to the end of the day to find a sponsor. And ding, 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 ding. Now, remember, 30 seconds before I was crying. Here goes that sober ego again, right? 30 seconds later, he tells me I got to get a sponsor. How you going to tell me what I'm going to do? You ain't my daddy. Right? Already the ego bounces back that fast. Who are you going to make me leave? What do you mean you get a sponsor? I don't need a sponsor. I sponsor myself. Since 1987, my life looks like a dumpster fire, but it doesn't matter because I am so smart I can't see that I am my own biggest problem. But when your rear end's on fire, you can think quickly. And I already knew who I was going to pick, Big Book Joe. He's Mr. AA in the meeting, the guy talking about God, steps, and staying after approaching newcomers with a big book tucked under his arm. And I always treat those guys with the same behavior always, not with respect. I always like talk smack about them, right? Because, that's what you do when you're jealous. When you don't have nothing and you know you are nothing, what you do is you make fun of the people that are doing something because it hurts to not be them. I want to be a man. I want to be respected. I want to be somebody. And yet, you know, like that dude's on that side of the fence and I'm over here. And I've always been over here. Some dudes are doctors. Some dudes are lawyers. Other dudes are failures. And that's where I'm at. And I can't get over there. But if anybody's going to get me out of trouble, it's like asking, I don't know, like asking Bob Hope to show up at your birthday party. You know, some of you are like, who's Bob Hope? Follow me here. Ask your mom. Ask your dad. My grandkids probably would have no idea who Bob Hope is either. But the point of the matter is, if I ask Big Book Joe to be my sponsor, I'm golden. That'll get me out of trouble automatically. So I do what anybody in my position would do. Let me check the time on this, because this is so retarded. You're not even going to believe this, right? I do what anybody in my situation would do, is I go and I decide the best thing for me to do right about now is go in the bathroom and practice asking this dude to help me out, because I need to look cool and tough at the same time. Because I ain't no punk. And I don't need his help. I just need to fly under the radar. But I also don't want to come off aggressive, right? Because we ain't a 14 Cayuga, so I really need this dude not to just, say, you ain't ready. You ever see those guys in AA? I got a few friends like that, and I haven't earned my stripes yet, but these guys in AA that believe that their emotional well-being is dependent upon their service to God, their home group, and their fellow alcoholics, and this dude is one of those dudes. So if you come at this dude with the, yo, what's up, fam? He's going to be like, yeah, hit me up when you get back, because you ain't ready yet. And when you first see that, you'll be like, who does he think he is? He doesn't. He knows that he's not the power. He knows that he doesn't have a magic wand. He knows that unless you have a little bit of humility, you don't stand a chance. So I practiced for a little bit, had to look cool, tough, and interested in the steps. That was retarded. That was really insane. And I heard this dude get ready to leave. Because see, what would happen is this dude, I knew who he was because people would share at the meeting how bad they were doing and how bad they wanted help. And this dude, after the meeting, book under his arm, walk over and say, hi, my name is Joe. So I already knew who he was. He was working with this dude in my house. And I would make fun of when he came over to the house. Like, look, there they go, AA police. They're going to save everybody. But that was only the first 3 days. Day three, I'm ready to be kicked out with a bad case of being sober. Things are getting kind of serious here. So I hear him get ready to leave, and I run outside, and I'm ready. I got my pitch. I know what I'm going to say. I know how I'm going to deliver. I'm looking right in his eyes. And I go outside and say, hey, you got a cigarette? For me. Because I was smoking Newports. He had Newports. I don't know if y'all have them out here. They're like $1.50 a pack. They're not even real cigarettes. They're garbage, but he had Newports, so that's the best I could come up with. And being the tough guy that I am, a real gangster, never afraid of anything my whole life, look death in the eye and not even shrink from it, go running towards it. Group of dudes, come at me, come get me. And like a real tough guy, I looked at him, took one look at him, and I said, please help me. Because I'm a problem. I don't know what my problem is, man. Like, I need help. And I can't do it. I've tried everything. I didn't try anything. But I had tried everything. I've been trying hard for days, remember, you know. But that's our version of the story. And this dude takes one look at me, looks me up and down. Says, get your hands on a big book, read the forward to the second edition. I'll be back tomorrow. If you're serious, so am I. If you're not, please don't allow me to waste your time. Please don't allow me. Who talks to me? I'm a scumbag. Please. He just said please to me. He's got an address and car keys. And the respect of everyone who knows him. And I'm trying to figure this out. Why he's treating me like a gentleman. He shows up the next day. He says, you serious? I say, yeah, yo. That's kind of quick. Bro, when you said tomorrow, you really meant today, you know? And he was like, my very life as an ex-problem drinker depends upon the constant thought of others and how I may help meet their needs. If you're serious, so am I. And if you're not, please don't allow me to waste your time. And I said, yeah, let's do it, man, because I'm pretty good with books. I'm pretty smart. He looks me up and down. He's like, yeah, I can tell you're on blackout, right? That's a ribbon for being one of the smartest people you know. It's like a prize, whatever. And I said, yeah, man, I really need help because I've been trying to do this for a while. I wasn't trying to do nothing. I've been trying to do this for a while. And he's like, it would be my honor. You ever hear that? Meet the people in AA? They're like, it'd be my honor to help you. Who's this guy talking about, right? Because I know he talked about me. I'm a scumbag. I'm a nobody. I'm a failed outlaw. I want to be a tough guy. And a coward's been hiding behind a pistol more years than I care to be honest about. And I just hope you don't ask me about the God thing. And we're reading. He's like, you read that thing I told you to read? I was like, yeah. He's like, what'd you think about it? I was like, I didn't read it. Because I was thinking all night what I'm going to say to this dude, right? Because that's how newcomers are. If you're here and you're tired of newcomers, let me remind you what it's like to be a newcomer. I'll do anything for help. I'll do anything you tell me to do. Read the foreword of the second edition. It's about 5 pages. It tells you exactly what AA is supposed to look like. Get busy. You're not going to understand it. Your job is to become an extension cord. The power flows through you, not from you. God is the power. You're simply the messenger. All you're supposed to do is transmit power to the powerless. So we're reading this, and it says something about permanent sobriety. And I said, whoa! That ain't what they say to me. He said, since when have you been paying attention? You got 4 days sober. You're on blackout. This is Philadelphia. You said you're an Indian from Colorado. And that's the part of AA you paid attention to, is one day at a time. Is it interesting that you let other people do your recovery and tell you what it is, but you never did that with alcohol? Why don't we try to pursue your recovery the same way you pursued your alcoholism? You made sure you got your hands on a bottle of booze, and from here on out, it's going to be your business to make sure you get your hands on this big book, because it can help you. I can't. And they're like, hold on, what do you mean you can't help me? Like, you got time sober. It's like Big Book Joe, right? He walks on water, in my opinion, only. Not really, but kind of. And if you're newly sober, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I want this guy's help. You better not try to tell me what to do. I really need him to give me direction, but you better not tell me how to do it. You know what I mean? That whole thing. Like, you ain't my daddy. And you're a white guy from South Philly. You're about as un-Native American as possible. You know what I mean? And I don't know, man. We're reading this stuff, and we get to 13, 14, drastic revolutionary program of action. So, I'm still detoxing, but did you just say on the page before, this dude was 12-step and others while he in their version of rehab? He's like, yeah. Not his first time. Took him a couple times to get it. You want to know why? Because the first couple times he was too smart. By the time he got his rear end handed to him, he figured it out. He better do something different. Now I was like, all right, so this is cool. We're going to do this. Permanent recovery. One alcoholic helps with another. This is great. You're going to help me. And he said, no. Turn to page 18. We get to page 18. The ex-problem drinker will probably arm the facts about itself, blah, blah, blah. If you're new, you're like, I don't care what page. What is this, a page contest? No. It's a page that I missed from 1987 to 2004. It says, until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished, which means getting a sponsor doesn't matter. You got to become a sponsor because somebody's out there dying waiting for you. Young, old, black, white, Puerto Rican, Asian, Native American, it doesn't matter. Somebody needs you to sit down and take them through the book. Somebody needs you to say, hey. And when they say, well, yeah, I'm going to go to a meeting, I don't care if you go to a meeting. I don't care if you make 17 meetings a day. We're going to need you to open the big book. We're going to need you to show people the 12 steps. We're going to need you to show people that it's not who tries harder, who's smarter, who has what background. It's, thank you, sir. It's very simply, get through the work. Get through the work. And then what happens is after you get through the work, you realize you didn't even do anything. It's so crazy. First step, alcohol made my life unmanageable. It's like, no, your ego made your life unmanageable. You know what's unmanageable by you? Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. That's why we have it in the 4-step. That's why we have it in the 10-step. So that's why we watch out for it in the 11-step. And the only thing we can do is ask God to remove that stuff when you get busy on the 12-step. That's crazy, right? 2nd step. I was like, Joe, I don't believe in God. And he was like, I don't care because you're a loser. But he believes in you. That's why we're here. So let's keep going. And I'm like, hold on. We can't keep going. I'm way too smart for this, right? Because this is how it works. It gets you in the cult and they heebie-jeebie you. And it gets you to believe in God. And I was like, well, we should probably discuss this because, you know, masculine God is a patriarchal idea brought over by Eastern Europeans. He's like, dude, you ever pee your pants because you drank too much? I was like, yeah. He's like, let's keep turning the pages. Now, what you need to know is, Harrison, Sugar and Spice, I used to tell you about, I used to have young boys on that corner. The boys feared me, right? Not because I'm cool, but because I was the Napoleon complex that brought violence and being quick to be an animal, we'll say. Fast forward 15 minutes, and I'm sitting outside of this dude's crappy little Toyota Camry, and I'm on my knees at the corner of Orthodox and Worth. Six blocks that way, there's dudes that are afraid of me. And over here, I'm kneeling. I don't even know what happened. We're kneeling next to his car. We were reading the book, this and the other, and then wham, we're outside of his car. I'm like, hold up, cuz. All this is great. But I ain't holding your hand in the street. You got me out here dealing. I'm not sure if I believe in this. And he said, kid, doesn't matter what you believe. Doesn't matter what you think. Doesn't matter what you feel. The only thing that matters in AA is what you do. And I'm like, well, this is not going to work. I'm not really sure. I don't know the words. He's like, here's the book. We're going to read this part right here. We're going to read it together. Now, why do you need to read it? You already know it, right? You memorize it. One of the dudes are like, rarely have we seen a person fail. Like, I feel like the dude's mocking me, right? But one thing I can get down with is, where I come from and ugly places where I come from, if you want me to do something, you better do it too. We're going to be there side by side, right? Nobody gets left behind. We both going in. Kick in the door. Go. And this dude isn't telling me to do something. He's on his knees too. You understand? He don't have to be. He's already got it, whatever it is. But what stuck out to me was this dude is kneeling right in the same place where I am. He's not telling me to do something. You ever meet those people in jail and programs and stuff, they tell you, what you need to do, that's not what Joey was doing. What Joey was doing, Joey saw a guy that was drowning and he jumped in the water and he taught me how to swim. And my big book then was no different from anybody else's big book. What hit me like a ton of bricks that day is he wasn't asking me to do something he had done. He was asking me to do something because he believed that it worked. And if he believed that it worked, then my God, maybe I could give it a shot. Maybe I could sneak in past God, right? Maybe I could do that. And it's time to do a four-step. And I'm in the kitchen stalling. Then this guy in my recovery house, here they come again, right? The guy's in a recovery house. It wasn't a guy with 40 years sober. It was a guy with like 3.5 weeks more than me, Mike Massington, that guy I tried to set up with Melissa. And he's a great guy. Guy saved my life. He walked through the kitchen, and he was like, and I'm like this with my four-step, right? I'm like... Now, I've told every bartender, south and north of the Mason-Dixon line, all the people that ever done me dirty. But now that I got put it on paper, now I don't want nobody to see it. Right? Anybody who ever hurt me, stabbed me in the back, turned their back on me, whatever. Really, the people got sick of me. They got sick of being hurt by me, who pulled away. I got to put them on paper. And this dude's like, what are you doing? I knew your four-step. And he walks out of the kitchen and laughs because he knew. Right? I just looked like a caged animal. Like, don't look at my paper. You know? And, 2 seconds later, it comes in, drops a couple of pieces of notebook paper on the table, said, that's how I did mine. I'll be back in a little bit. You can check that out. Maybe that'll help you out. And walks out. I was blown away. Right? They share secrets. Right? This is like getting the answers to, like, some of y'all probably didn't do this, but like the bad kids in class, what we do is we try to get a copy of the teacher's quiz that already had the answers on it, and then we would pass it amongst each other, all the cool kids or whatever, all the kids that were failing, really. But that's basically what he did. I got the teacher's copy, right? And I'm like, well, this is easy. And mom, dad, and what happened? Ooh, let me see what happened. And my sponsor shows up and wants to do a fist step. This fool wants me to trust him with this backpack that I have drugged with me through every state, through every relationship, through every child, through everything that I've ever been through. He wants me to unpack this invisible backpack, and it's mine. Because the crazy thing about us is, I'll tell you how bad I'm hurting, but if you try to help me unpack this, I say, get out of here. I can't trust you. Now, I may trust you at 4 o'clock in the morning at a gas station if I've never met you. However, that's totally different. I may trust you with my children's future. I may trust you with my mother's tears. I may trust the entire state of Kentucky with my freedom, giving them my life on a vacation plan. You know, go see them 6 months. And, bye, guys. See you later. And then go back again another 6 months. I'll trust alcohol to destroy my life, but somebody's trying to help me get better. He wants to get this thing off of me, and he wants to help me unpack it. And 8:45, the short end of it is what this dude does. And I've never heard anybody explain it as well as my buddy Johnny. And what Johnny E says is, you know, what his sponsor did was he took his armor off. You know, King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table back in the day, if you follow that mythology, they would have their battles and stuff, but when they came back, and before they all sat at the table together, in order to sit at the table together, they would take off their armor. And that's what his sponsor did for him in his fifth step. He took us off his armor, so Johnny knew it was okay for him to take off his armor, and that's what Joey did for me. Taught me that it was okay to take off the armor. Anyhow, I don't know. Next thing you know, I want to tell you that I felt great after a fifth step. I didn't. Because I saw it wasn't the Europeans who ruined this continent for my people. You people didn't make it hard on this Native American. I did. I had disgraced my family lineage. I had disgraced my ancestors. How can I say what you people did when it was 400 years ago, when it was been me for the last 30 years ruining my life? It wasn't that I was adopted. It wasn't that I was orphaned. It wasn't that I was beaten. It wasn't that I was abandoned. It wasn't any of that stuff. Anything that happened to me up until the point I was 13 that could not touch what had been done by me to me. Alcoholism is a long, drawn-out assassination attempt on me, and I'm the one pulling the trigger. And I'm not talking about anybody else. I'm talking at me. The way that I used to do that back in the 90s was, I should go to a meeting. No. Let's do something else. I'm listening to somebody who don't even like me. Me. Sixth step is very simple. Take a look at me. I don't want to be me. No, I want to be somebody else. A lot of people misunderstand snakes. Native American mythology is snakes are not like scary or dirty. They're sacred. They carry prayers to the Great Mother, Mother Earth, Mother Nature, Mother Ocean, you know. Masculine is great, you know, patriarchal God is awesome, but it takes a woman to create life. It's not my opinion, it's science. I'm not here to argue politics. It takes male and female to create life. And what a lot of people don't understand is they think snakes shed their skin to grow. They don't. Snakes shed their skin like you and I do a fifth step so we can continue growing. Because slithering around on the ground, we pick up toxins and impurities and all these things that we have to choose to let go if we want to keep growing and to be able to breathe correctly as spiritual beings. Because somewhere along the line, I had lost my humanity. The sixth step and the seventh step, which kept me very busy, I had this guy tell me to write seven step prayer down on a little index card, put it in the back of my cigarette pack and read it. I must have rewrote that thing like 18 times because I was mad a lot. I've heard a lot of people say other stuff, but whenever I feel myself getting aggravated, I just remind myself not to. I'm not wired that way. I've got to ask God for help. I can't fix myself. I need a power greater than myself. And what happens is when I start to do that, my brain starts to take off and light up, and new neurological connections are made, and synaptical connections start to light up. And what happens is the brain rewires itself through spiritual activity of surrender. God help me. Save me from myself. I make an eight-step list. This is great, right? You got to go apologize to people that own you. People that you would rather punch in the face, you have to make a list of and prepare to ask God for the courage to make those amends. Because the truth is, if we were gonna, we would have done it already. And what the book says is I have to ask God for the courage to do it. And the ninth step has its varying things. And the tenth step is watching out for my ego. And the 11th step is where I fall on my face. See, God, I spent years saying, why me? Why did this happen to me? Why did I have to go through this? Why did I have to be the first one through the door? Why did I have to be so eager to show off? Why me? And the 11th step is a place where I get to come and answer those seven questions and say, God, why me? I know so many good men and women that are gone. And they know the literature way better than I do. The guy who I followed in the recovery house who gave me that hug didn't even stay for the full 30 days. Now I'm at step 12. I got 24 days sober. My sponsor's like, yo, go get him. I'm like, hold on, bro. I got 24 days sober. You are crazy. I can't help nobody. And what he says to me is, you're right. You can't. But you can carry the message. God is the power. Your job is just to carry the message to them. And that didn't make a whole lot of sense for me. And I figured, remember what I told you before, I'm still trying to sneak in under God's radar. So I knew what anybody in my condition would do. I know that I used to go hard out there. I know that the safety was always off. I knew that there was always rounds in the chamber, and I always knew that I was the first one to swing them back. So when it came time to put that big book under my arm, I did exactly what a guy who's afraid of himself does. I ran with it. And I ran up and down Kensington Avenue, and I was down at Needle Park and Tioga Park, and I'm trying to read with guys that I used to hang out with, and I'm trying to talk to guys that I used to bust clips with, and I'm trying to talk to guys, and everybody's like, hey man, you can't do that. You have microwave sobriety. And then it started. Jesus Jeremy, Bill Wilson Jr., AA Police, Step Nazi. And I go to my sponsor with my little big book, and I said, hey Joe, this is what they called me. And he said, that sounds like it's the nicest thing anybody's ever called you in a while. Or would you have rather have your daughter call you a loser? Would you rather be called a defendant by the prosecuting attorney? What's it going to be, tough guy? Carry this message or become this message? And I told him, Mom, I got some amends I can't make, Joe. You know, because not everything can be undone. And what he told me was, the book says some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. So if you were here tonight and you ever swung a bat at somebody, or you ever emptied a clip at somebody, or if you ever crashed into somebody's car and they stopped breathing as a result of the actions that you took, you better get busy, because you owe for your seat. And what that means is love and service with the big book. Love and service without the big book, the message gets convoluted. They were smart enough to figure it out back in the day. Hey, we're going to need something to keep this set. Because your message versus my message versus their message versus the sponsor. Rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. What it says is, we're average Americans. What the book also says is our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. You may be doing okay, Jeremy, but how about them? How are they doing? Are you checking up on them? Do you have a phone? Are you running into big books? Are you running into men's recovery houses? The joy of my life has been invading men's recovery houses for the last 17 and a half years, I got to tell you. My girlfriend, I love you so much, she said to me on the way up here, she's like, you get excited about doing this? I said, no. I like meeting guys on the front line. Because when I meet a guy in a recovery house, I always get to steal the same thing from him that my sponsor stole from me. And it's the same thing that every good AA member wants from every newcomer. We want the same thing across the board. Doesn't matter what color you are. Doesn't matter what your religion you are. We want the same thing. We want your pain. Because every time we get to help one of you, you give us this little time travel ticket, and we get to go back to when somebody helped us when we were drowning. And we get to experience that all over again. And then again, like I said, last 17 and a half, my girlfriend is hilarious. She got me this Christ Crusader, it says on my license plate. I'm like, all right, I might as well, she told me, just own it. Because they're going to talk about you. If you're here tonight, you're like, well, they say I'm too serious about AA. Visit a morgue. Alcoholism is pretty serious. And I'm not here to scare you. I'm here to do the same thing I said at the very beginning. I'm here to ask for you to help us. We're outnumbered. There's tons of AA meetings all over the world. If 5 people would go through the book like they believe that this is the thing that works, taking others through the book, believing in God is not as important as working for God. That's my experience. Because somebody that God should have given up on, I've been given the opportunity to do crazy stuff, right? They give drunken Indians from the railroad tracks. You get to go to these conferences and stuff. And it's, you know, the first time I went, it was really cool. It was like 1,000 people. And my kids are in the car and the valets are coming up. But my kids are like hood kids, you know? So I'm like, yo, lock the windows. They're trying to carjack us. And my kids are grabbing for the doors like, nah, this is messing with you. They're valeting. They're supposed to be trying to get in the car. It's messing with you. And these are cool. If nothing else, to give you testimony that it doesn't matter how far you are, if you're out there tonight, or if you've done something, if you took a life, if you put somebody in the ground, I am here to tell you that God still has a purpose and a plan for you. And if you are ashamed for what you have done, Ayota Matar Ruiz, it's Lakota, all things are related. The hoop is sacred. If you've taken a life, you've got to save a life. You owe. People have busted my stones for years. It's almost 2 decades. Don't you ever get tired? Don't you ever, doesn't it get old? My girlfriend switched the furniture on us. We used to have this little short table and then she got this lamp. So what I'll do, let me tell you how spiritual I am. I get up in the morning, I roll out of bed, I hit my knees. I forgot that she moved the furniture. So I'm like this, stuck on this like shelf thing because I rolled out of bed and I'm old, you know. And I'm thinking to myself, this must look hilarious to God. This is how spiritual I am. I'm trying to roll out of bed and say, thank you for not giving up on me even after I've given up on you. Thank you for allowing me to serve. And if you ever meet anybody that I sponsor, anybody that they sponsor, anybody that they sponsor, they tell you I help them, do me a favor and tell them that they're lying. All I do is transmit power with the big book open. It's not my power. I borrow the power. Clear the way in a wonderful manner I come, meaning it's not my manner. If you start to do this, you're going to feel like the whole universe is coming against you. Don't make the mistake of thinking that the darkness don't want you back. Expect opposition. The good news for you is those who are with you, those who are for you, are greater than those who are against you. However, people are going to die unless you help me, unless you help us. And the good news is the more screwed up you are, the more people you can help. Because when they wander in there, be like, you're in here. Be like, nobody else will have me. Nobody else will have me. Sometimes AA gets chalked up to be like this cult thing. And we've all heard that thing, like, be the living example of a big book to somebody else. I don't know that. I'm not qualified to speak on that. I don't have enough time. 17 and a half years, I'm still relatively new. I have some guys in my circle to tell me 17 and a half years sober, I'm basically a teenager. Right? Like I know what a teenager would know at 17 and a half years old as far as sobriety is concerned. But my prayer these mornings are the same they were that first week. God, save me from myself. God, take me, break me, shape me, make me, mold me into something useful. Because I just don't want to be useless anymore. And I don't want anybody else to feel useless. Because I know what it's like. It takes one to know one. Please help us. Thank you for your time.